I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody. We got a great show planned for you. Later in the show, I'll be sitting down with Phil Kogan of The Amazing Race. Yes, that show where we get to see, while having our heart rate and anxiety spiked, a little trip around the world. That show's going strong. So we'll be sitting down to talk about that and mental health and COVID. Let's talk about some news. Polyamory, it's in the news. I love this. Why? Because it just normalizes creativity and diversity. Somerville, Massachusetts. Interesting, right? They're recognizing polyamorous domestic partnerships. Yep, they just passed a domestic partnership ordinance that includes polyamorous relationships of more than two. I love that. They're using language inclusivity. And look, that's just how it is. It's kind of like when we talk about gay characters in television. People get upset and they're saying, you're promoting it. And it's like, we're not promoting anything. We're just recognizing that they're there. And so they get to show up in storylines. Look, those same people are not complaining about the fact that murderers and rapists are showing up in storylines. Why? Are we promoting that by putting them in a film or a movie? No, we're depicting reality. Art should reflect back reality, and we're just showing what is, and we're showing what's in existence. It is by no means something supportive of that. However, I am supportive of polyamory. There's nothing unhealthy about it. They definitely are healthy, solid, strong, committed relationships full of love. And I love that we're starting to change language, because that's one of the frustrations I've always had with marriage is individuals should get to choose what their relationships look like. The government shouldn't get to decide for us, nor should laws, what our relationships look like. Laws and government should match and meet our needs, and times have changed, and people are in throuples and polyamorous relationships, open stuff. Styles, and that should be honored. And I want to be able to marry as many people as I'm in a romantic, loving relationship with, if that makes sense to me. So more of that coming, and I am here for it. I love it. Now, more good news. YouTube is banning a white supremacist. Love this. David Duke. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him. I grew up hearing his name thrown around, but YouTube on Monday terminated channels belonging to high profile white supremacists, a whole bunch of them. And I love that. A bunch of major social media sites are also aggressively tackling hateful content. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. The platforms themselves get to decide what they want to participate in. And free speech means you get to have your speech. That's not being removed, but there gets to be consequences to your problematic speech. That is not covered under free speech laws, consequences. And platforms get to decide what they honor and support. So you get to use your speech, but you just got to take it elsewhere, platforms like YouTube are saying. This is a little heartbreaking. Don't be a sheep. Yeah, that's a punchy one. That is a quote, ready for this one, by a Washington sheriff. Yes, he is urging residents, oh my God, to defy a statewide mask mandate. Lewis County Sheriff Robert Snaza made these controversial remarks while addressing a maskless crowd of locals outside a church. See what we did there? We're folding in the republicanism, the heightened religiosity, and those tend to be the circles around which a lot of pushback on wearing the masks. It's quite fascinating. Also, some more dark news. Dr. Fauci, he's the one that we're listening to right now. He's over at the CDC. He says drinking inside a bar is one of the most dangerous things you can do. Yeah. Why? Well, alcohol, our executive functioning goes offline, right? Inhibitions. And so we take risks. Also, a lot of bars are very small and packed, and so we can't maintain the distance. And it breaks every recommendation. We're told to limit our exposure, right? Be around people for short periods. It's not what a bar does. Be outdoors. Bars are indoors, typically. Not around crowds. Typically what bars do. I mean, it just isn't going to work. And so that's what we're worried about. Talking of which, Vanilla Ice. So he got a lot of backlash last week because he was going to perform a concert in Texas, despite heartbreaking surges in infections of COVID, but it's going to get, got canceled. Now, deeper diving into the research, I saw that he had only sold, I think, like 84 of the magnitude of, you know, possible tickets that were available. So I was happy to see that. And, you know, I think the reason why it got canceled is because of poor ticket sales, honestly, not because they're looking out for everyone. But that's heartbreaking. You know, we talked about this. People with big platforms, people listen. And that's why I think things are such a mess, because people are still listening to like our president. You know, and again, here in LA, pretty much everything's gotten rolled back. We've basically lost everything that was reopened because people still aren't acting right and wearing their masks, which is why it's now a law and you can get fined. Look, we're doing that to save lives, right? So if y'all all would follow the rules, then I can get back to living my life and back to the gym. And that's what I'm trying to do. So let's get to it. And then finally, look, this is something I want everyone to learn a little bit from. A gay bar is in the news because they laid off their entire staff via like a Facebook message and an email. That's heartbreaking because people sometimes feel like they're part of a family when they work for a company and organization, and just on the fly to get an email being like, yo, sorry about it, was really heartbreaking for them. It was a smaller bar. They all knew each other. It just felt very disrespectful to them. They felt like they deserved more. And I understand that. And then also, did you guys hear this one? Someone at Starbucks was shamed, a barista, by this woman. I know you're probably aware of it, basically because of store mask policies. And everyone started tipping the individual, the barista who got attacked, and he got 100K because people were like, yeah, you know, you're upholding the law. You're looking out for everyone. Well done. Don't let this white woman, AKA known as a Karen culturally these days, really push back on you. She now has come out saying she wants some of the money. She feels like she's responsible for this windfall he's gotten. You are, but it was an unfortunate thing. You aren't deserving of some of that money. Ah. That's the world we live in these days. Anyway, a love line on our IG page. Question of the night's up. Time to weigh in on that. And also, we'll be talking with Phil Kogan of The Amazing Race. So stick around for that. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com. All right, now we're going to go to our first guest, Phil Kogan, EP and host of Tough as Nails on CBS. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very good. I just wanted to say thank you for following the memo that I sent with regards to the unshaven look and also the blue shirt. One button done up, undone up at the bottom. The only thing that's not matching is apparently you have far more tattoos than I do.
I like to follow the rules sometimes, but I will work on the tattoo thing. So I always like to start the show just by talking about mental health. So right now, through everything that's going on with COVID and whatnot, how is your mental health?
Well, you know what? My family's close by. my wife and my daughter. How is my mental health, everybody?
Uh-oh.
Questionable, apparently. Questionable? Always questionable? Is that it? Is that all I'm going to get? And my daughter doesn't say anything.
All right, now we're going to go to our first guest, Phil Kogan, EP and host of Tough as Nails on CBS. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very good. I just wanted to say thank you for following the memo that I sent with regards to the unshaven look and also the blue shirt. One button done up, undone up at the bottom. The only thing that's not matching is apparently you have far more tattoos than I do.
I like to follow the rules sometimes, but I will work on the tattoo thing. So I always like to start the show just by talking about mental health. So right now, through everything that's going on with COVID and whatnot, how is your mental health?
Get focused on something.
Well, you know what? My family's close by.
Whether it's reading my wife, my daughter. How is my mental health?
Doing something I've always wanted to do, never done before.
Questionable, apparently. Questionable.
Try to immerse yourself in something that makes you feel good.
Is that it? Is that all I'm going to get?
We need that right now.
And my daughter doesn't say anything. Yeah. She runs out the door to go test drive a car.
It says it all, Phil.
I think I'm in pretty good shape. I won't say it hasn't been challenging.
For someone like yourself who works a lot, and congratulations on everything.
Because it has been.
Is Wednesday, 8 p.m.
And what's really helped me is being distracted with
Amazing Race as well.
A job.
How do you maintain connections with those you love?
To focus on something that I feel really passionate about.
Well, it's
so people have asked me about how to get through this.
This
and I've
is
said
the longest
to them,
that I've ever been
get
in
focused
place
on something, get really
never
into something, whether it's reading a book.
I've never been so grounded, I guess you could say.
Doing something you've always wanted to do, never done before, and just try to.
5 years.
Try to immerse yourself in something that makes you feel good. 250,000 miles.
We need that right now more than ever.
1994.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful advice. And that's what I'm kind of telling people that I'm working with clinically as well, is find something meaningful, you know, to do at this time. Otherwise, it can add another layer of depression.
It's very challenging.
So for someone like yourself who works a lot, and congratulations on everything, Tough as Nails is Wednesday, 8 p.m. And also, we're going to be doing a little season 32 of Amazing Race as well. How do you maintain connections with those you love while so busy and on the road?
Or people based on people knowing what I do.
Well, it's challenging. I mean, it's a day-to-day thing, right? This is the longest that I've ever been in one place in my life.
I do struggle with that sometimes this because I am a workaholic,
kind of,
and
I've never been so grounded, I guess you could say.
My parents and
I've been in television for 35 years. And I think I've averaged around 250,000 miles
keep on going
a year
going
since
going.
1994.
So I have to force myself to relax.
I had one year where I traveled 463 or 67, somewhere around there, 1,000 miles. It's very challenging, especially when you have a child.
I really enjoyed it.
That's why she ran out to test drive a car.
And I didn't. I didn't.
But it's very challenging. My family live in New Zealand.
My phone. I didn't work for an entire day.
But
great.
All the relationships that I have are based on, people knowing what I do and the fact that this is a part of my life. So you just have to, set aside time.
No, I find time to get.
I do struggle with that sometimes because I am a workaholic and
I get paid to do something.
I got that from, frankly, would pay my parents and then their parents before them. You know, coming from working class people, I think there's a
feel very lucky
a work ethic and a drive to just keep on going and going and going. So I have to force myself to relax. I had my first day off work this year a few weekends ago. My daughter forced me to do that for my birthday. I have to say I really enjoyed it.
Happy.
And I did it.
I get them to.
I did it.
Do an exercise like.
I did it with 100% commitment. I didn't pick up my phone. I didn't work for an entire day, and it felt great.
Food,
I tend
reading,
to do that with things. If I get into something,
like write out,
I'm all in, including relaxing when I do relax, which is not that
and
often.
And then ask yourself, well, how can I do?
No, I find time to get out, and you know,
that involves
I do feel lucky that I get paid to do something that I, quite frankly, would pay
qualification and something
to do. I mean, that's how much I love.
So you need to know what it is that you
feel very lucky
out of life.
Yeah, the kind of people you've gotten to meet and also the places in the world that you've gotten to go. It's quite impressive.
People are happy to be around you.
Very lucky in that regard. And you know, throughout my career as I've gotten older, I've tried to help more and more people identify the things that really make them happy.
Something that you can offer.
And I get them to do an exercise like as simple as just getting out a piece of paper and writing down all the things that make them happy.
People
want to be around travel,
people,
food,
who have that
reading,
positive
gardening, whatever it is, like
they
write out
providing
what are the things that make you the happiest
away from
and then ask
else,
yourself, well, how can I do more of those things?
Something out.
And sometimes that involves a career change or
yeah,
it involves
I love that
studying to get
a
qualification in something that you've always
part of.
Wanted
we'll be right
to
back
do.
With Phil Kogan.
So you need to know what it is that
show,
you want to get
nails.
Out of life and make yourself as
right,
happy
so
as you can be so that
I watched
people are happy to be around
the,
you.
And
it's
thought,
your responsibility,
I don't know that
I think,
I can do
to
any of the jobs
create your own happiness.
Doing.
Other people shouldn't make you happy. It's about
shape,
you
size, gender,
being
but
fulfilled
really
and then having something that you can offer
also their resilience.
Others.
Talk to us about that and the people that were chosen.
And that is...
So
that,
I mentioned
that,
that
is what
class.
Creates
people,
an infectious
miners,
personality.
Miners,
people want to be
farmers,
around people
mechanic,
who have that positive
mechanic,
energy
World War II,
where there's something that they, they're providing rather than kind of sucking stuff away from somebody else.
Who
you're
work with
pushing
hands,
something out
can do things with
into the
hands,
world, something positive.
Tools.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And
I love that,
that
advice. When you're focusing on yourself, you're actually focusing on the health of other relationships you're a part of.
We'll
be right back with Phil Kogan to talk more about his new show, Tough as Nails.
To have a tertiary education, but my parents did. And my grandparents' generation, you know, came through the Depression and then World War II, they were all about pushing their kids into getting a tertiary education. And what's happened is we kind of started to look down on those people who are in the trades. Like somehow, if you don't have a degree and if you haven't gone to university, you're somehow less than. Like you can't have a fulfilling life doing something in the trades. You have to have a degree. That is the key to the kingdom of happiness and being a good contributor in society. And so it always frustrated me that
people had that attitude.
All right, so let's talk about Tough as Nails. I watched the trailer and I thought, wow, I don't know that I could do any of the jobs that these individuals are doing, and the diversity of people in terms of shape, size, gender, but also it's really impressive, their dedication, but also their resilience. So talk to us about that and the people that were chosen.
I just want us to get back to honoring. So I mentioned that I come from working class people, coal miners, gold miners, farmers. My grandfather's a mechanic, auto mechanic, and a World War II era mechanic. I've always been inspired and loved watching people who work with their hands, people who can do things with their hands, their number one set of tools, and that knowledge that they have to be able to get things done. It's always fascinated me, and it's always frustrated me that, you know, my grandparents didn't get a chance to have a tertiary education, but my parents did.
And
my grandparents' generation, you know, who came through the Depression and then World War II, they were all about pushing their kids into getting a tertiary education. And what's happened is
take a little time to
we kind of
that's really what
started to look down on those people who are in the trades. Like somehow, if you don't have a degree and if you haven't gone to university,
and I had them compete,
you're somehow less than. Like you can't have a fulfilling life doing something in the trades. You have to have a degree. That is
something on a farm,
the key to the kingdom of happiness and life. Being a good contributor in society. And so it always frustrated me that people had that attitude. We've got 3 million trade jobs right now that are vacant in this country. And you can't tell me that there aren't some high school kids that would be great at going into the trades and being mechanics and studying under a master tradesperson. So I just want us to get back to honoring that and see that that is something very valuable. And just so happens that right now we are appreciating our essential workers perhaps more than we ever have since Rosie the Riveter in World War II. And so the timing of the show going on the air
tough.
And acknowledging those hard-working men and women who roll up their sleeves every day, get the job done,
your work,
who wear the calluses on their hands as a badge of honor.
You might
those people
see
who
from the outside and
allow
think,
us to flush our toilets, turn on
somebody,
the lights,
on the way looking,
who
you get to
help
them,
us get
like,
food
wow,
on the table,
so
who make things work, make sure the roads are smooth, who are up on buildings, you know, connecting massive I-beams. Those people that are essential to the world working that we take a little time to honor them. And that's really what this show is all about. So I picked 12 of who I believe are the toughest workers in America. I brought them to Los Angeles and I had them compete at real job sites.
I wanted to explore what toughness is outside
against each other. You might see a fireman doing something on a farm. We have people from all walks of life.
You can also
they're not going to be running over obstacle courses or you know, competing on some reality set that we've built. We're taking them to real job sites, real people in real life who are real tough, going to real job sites to compete, to find out who is the toughest of them all.
Yeah, and it was interesting watching, like I said earlier, the diversity, because I saw the one woman speaking about being a female iron worker, and I was like, well done, because again, I couldn't do that, but I like that it's a reminder that you don't have to take a career or skill that's traditionally a certain gender.
They're male, they're female.
Yeah, that was kind of a key factor in the show was, what is toughness? You know, what does it mean to be
tough. Many shapes and sizes, and that's sort of
and you understand
really to explore,
you know, I'm sure just in your work you've met
I'm inspired,
people
and that's
who
going to be on Wednesday nights at 8
you
PM,
might
so
see from the outside
out
and think oh that you make a judgment about somebody but
doing,
based on the way they look
the
and then when you get to know them you're like wow
yeah,
that person
you.
Is so incredibly resilient and tough. Now my mother is 78 years old and I am
nobody
going to say without question
that
of all the people I've ever met in the world, she is hands down the toughest person
the
I've ever met. Now, is she stronger than my dad, who at 78 for his birthday did 430 push-ups? No. But mentally tough, nobody can match her, in my opinion. And so
just
I wanted to explore what toughness is outside or off the NFL. You know, you don't have to be an NFL
beautiful.
Player or an
all
MMA
right,
fighter to be
so
tough. You can
night.
Also
yeah,
be tough by getting
coming
up every
next,
day at 4 o'clock, driving an hour and a half to work, pulling in a full day's work, going to a second job, going to
all
the
right,
grocery store, picking up groceries, cooking for your
DMs.
Family, freezing the food for their meal the next night, going to bed at midnight, getting up at 4 again and doing it over and over and over again year after year. And that to me is tough. And that's something that I wanted to explore.
Hey, Dr. Chris.
So you're going to see
two kids by the same
that we
daddy.
Will redefine what toughness is
and that it comes in many shapes and sizes. Sometimes you'll see some two people on our show who are in their 60s. They're male, they're female, they're young, they're old, black, white, you know, different trades. Toughness comes in many shapes and sizes, and that's sort of something we really wanted to explore on the show.
Beautifully said. I'm inspired. And that's going to be on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. so people can go back and check out the 2-hour premiere. Thanks for everything you're doing and congrats on the show.
Yeah, thank you. And I do want to say that in addition to finding the toughest of them all, nobody goes home. That's what makes Toughest Nails different, is everybody stays to the end of the competition, because even if you get cut from the individual competition, you stay to compete in a team competition, and there's money to be won in the team competition as well. So if you fall in love with the characters that you see on Toughest Nails, just know that they're going to stay all the way to the end of the series, because there's two mutually exclusive competitions happening at the same time.
Beautiful. All right, we'll be tuning in. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful night.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Coming up next, we're sliding into the DMs.
And you're looking to spend time with them, well, then we do it anyway. And so nothing can promise that it's going to go smoothly. So I don't know, but maybe it's also time to get into some therapy and kind of look at the current structures and situations in your life. We can also sometimes just really allow that anxiety to build and fester by not practicing or getting out there, taking chances. But as far as also the bisexual piece, your kids are old enough. Every kid at any age is old enough to know about bisexuality. Use television, songs, movies. You can, from birth, just talk about how people are different races and people are different genders and people are different sexual orientations, age appropriately, but honestly, you know, but there's nothing toxic about that. Let's go to another question. Dear Dr. Chris, I don't know what to do. I think my husband has been going out, not cheating, but I think he started to do coke. Oh, shoot. He's with his brothers. I know because I have his location. Okay, we got to talk about that. But the other day I asked for his credit card and he gave me his wallet and there's a little baggie in it. What's the best way to confront him? Well, we don't confront people, right? Adults are, in theory, allowed to do what they want. So we don't confront people. Also know that confronting makes people defensive and it makes people feel attacked. And so you want to have a loving and honest conversation about what you found. And that's really what it is. There's no best way other than loving. And so I'd find a moment when things feel good and safe, when there's time and space to talk, and you can turn to him and say to him, listen, I found drugs in your wallet and I wanted to just understand what that's about and how often this is happening, and be open, because maybe he'll let you know he's a casual user. I know it's shocking for some people to hear that, but some people casually use drugs or alcohol. Not everyone that drinks a cocktail a couple times a week is an alcoholic, and not everyone that engages in drug use is a drug addict. These are things that some people manage and use, right? So you want to talk about that. And then you have to really look at him and his answers and see if it feels safe and stable to you. But don't assume casual use equals a problem. You know, what we're talking about now in the field is that not drug and alcohol use isn't black or white. Just because someone has a few drinks doesn't mean they need to never drink again. And not everyone's ready for sobriety or complete abstinence. So even if he does say, you know, the coke use is feeling out of control, I don't feel like I'm managing it, it's leading to problems, harm reduction might be the best model, where he starts to talk about, how can I use it in a safer way? How can I decrease its severity? How can I be more thoughtful and intentional?
Because again, all right, we're back. And now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. I have two kids by the same baby daddy. One is 14,
do a little research,
one is 11.
Ahead of time,
we've been broken up for years, and his family isn't really a part of their lives. Recently, my 14-year-old is asking why I don't have a boyfriend, but to be honest, I'm bi and I don't know how to tell them. I'm not dating anyone, and I haven't for a while, in fear of what's going to happen. So here, you know, again, here's an example of where our dating history impacts our thoughts and feelings of what's possible and what's to come. And this is where we talk again about leaving people better off, but also being thoughtful about who you allow into your life, knowing that it's not just casual dating or it's not a one-off that we're going to walk away from the situation, feeling like better for it or worse off for it. So I do like that you're being thoughtful.
awful about that. But here's the thing: when we come back, we're going to be breaking that. You got to get back out there. You need what we call corrective experience. You need to be shown that dating can be fun, sex can be fun, that the world's not as scary as you think it is. And so, start practicing dating. I want to weigh in on that piece for a second. You know, you're afraid of what's going to happen. Look, we never know what's going to happen. And relationality, whenever we're doing anything with other human beings, there's ups, there's downs. It can be scary. We never really know what's going to happen. But if you find value in it, and you're looking to spend time with them, well, then we do it anyway. And so nothing can promise that it's going to go smoothly. So I don't know. But maybe it's also time to get into some therapy and kind of look at the current structures and situations in your life. We can also sometimes just really allow that anxiety to build and fester by not practicing or getting out there taking chances. But as far as also the bisexual piece, your kids are old enough. Every kid at any age is old enough to know about bisexuality. Use television, songs, movies. You can, from birth, just talk about how people are different races and people are different genders and people are different sexual orientations, age appropriately, but honestly, you know, but there's nothing toxic about that. Let's go to another question. Dear Dr. Chris, I don't know what to do. I think my husband has been going out. Not cheating, but I think he started to do coke. Oh, shoot. He's with his brothers. I know because I have his location.
Yeah, and okay, I think we got to talk about that.
The other day, I asked for his credit card, and he gave me his wallet, and there's a little baggie in it. What's the best way to confront him? Well, we don't confront people, right? Adults are, in theory, allowed to do what they want, so we don't confront people. Also, know that confronting makes people defensive, and it makes people feel attacked, and so you want to have a loving and honest conversation about what you found. And that's really what it is. There's no best way other than loving. And so I'd find a moment when things feel good and safe, when there's time and space to talk, and you can turn to him and say to him, listen, I found drugs in your wallet, and I wanted to just understand what that's about and how often this is happening, and be open, because maybe he'll let you know he's a casual user. I know it's shocking for some people to hear that, but some people casually use drugs or alcohol. Not everyone that drinks a cocktail a couple times a week is an alcoholic, and not everyone that engages in drug use is a drug addict. These are things that some people manage and use, right? So you want to talk about that. And then you have to really look at him and his answers and see if it feels safe and stable to you. But don't assume casual use equals a problem. You know, what we're talking about now in the field is that not drug and alcohol use isn't black or white. Just because someone has a few drinks doesn't mean they need to never drink again. And not everyone's ready for sobriety or complete abstinence. So even if he does say, you know, the coke use is feeling out of control, I don't feel like I'm managing it, it's leading to problems, harm reduction might be the best model, where he starts to talk about, how can I use it in a safer way? How can I decrease its severity? How can I be more thoughtful and intentional? Because again, not everyone's ready for complete sobriety or even open to that. And so that's, I guess, the second piece of this conversation is, you have to also really be ready to hear his experience. So go in it non-judgmental, not with a goal other than to hear and to learn. So it's about being open and staying grounded, you know? Do a little research yourself ahead of time, though. I'll throw that in there as well, that us armed with some education and some facts and all that can help. But again, you're not going in saying you have a problem, this isn't okay. Go in open and letting him kind of explain his position and his situation. And then you as a couple really decide what that's going to mean, you know? But this could be a beautiful moment where you also just practice having really difficult conversations, because the couples that are comfortable with difficult conversations wouldn't have an issue addressing something like this, you know? So there might be some distance and space. And also remember, you want to be safe for him to go to, so you don't want to be problematic or attacking in the responses, thereby letting him know, like, I'm not a safe person to have difficult conversations with. All right, question of the night. It's up on our Loveline AG page. When we come back, we're going to be breaking that on down. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and on radio.com.
Instead of lower well-being. So don't feel guilty about turning to your favorite television shows or your favorite movies as a means of feeling connected. That's good. That's healthy.
We'll be right back with Dr. Shira Gabriel. We'll be talking more about social isolation. Dr. Shira Gabriel, Associate Professor of Psychology. And I think, you know, positive outcome that came from this that I saw in my own life and also, you know, clients in my private practice is that it also reminded us, me and them, that we were maybe putting work too much as a center point of priority, and that we're realizing how we really do need these relationships in our lives, and that we weren't giving them enough attention and focus.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that's such a beautiful thing to hear. Like, if people can find a way to learn from this and turn this into a positive thing, like that's a huge predictor of well-being in life is being able
to... All right, now let's go to our next guest, Dr. Shira Gabriel, Associate Professor of Psychology. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we're going to talk a little bit about surviving social isolation. I know that when COVID happened, we weren't necessarily prepared. Also didn't know the length of time that we're going to have to be self-isolating. So when we're talking about trying to get through this as best we can, what do we need to be considering?
So I think it differs for every person. We all have a basic human need for social connection. So we need to talk to other people. We need to feel connected to other people. We need to feel like we're a part of something bigger than the self. But we do differ in how we fill that need for connection. So people need to think about the best way that the things that they do that tend to make them feel connected in their regular lives when we aren't being socially isolated. And then they need to try and come up with ways that they can fill those needs even through social isolation. And we've been doing a little research on it, so I have some ideas of what those things can be. But for each person, it might differ based on what you like to do when you have all your options.
Yeah, and I think I'm so thankful that it's happening at a time when we have the use of technology, because I don't know what we would have done had this happened back in the day when we used GASP landlines. Remember those? So in a general sense, though, for those that, you know, generalizing, what would be the top three things that you'd recommend to people to get through this at their best?
So the top three things. The first thing is, if you have access to programs like Skype or Zoom, or if you can use your iPhone to video talk with people, make sure to do that. So make sure to keep in contact with people in that way. That's one thing to do. So our research suggests that if you can do that, it helps. When you do that, turn off your self view. So you can Google how to do that if you don't know how to do it, but you don't want to be looking at yourself while you're talking to other people, because it takes up mental resources. It's not normal, basically. And most of the time we can't see ourselves. So when we can see ourselves, even if we're not normally self-conscious, we feel self-conscious, and it depletes us. It makes us tired. I don't know if you've ever been on a Zoom with people and it seems fun, but then at the end you're kind of exhausted. Part of the reason for that might be if you have your self view turned on. That's just not a normal way to interact with other people.
Wait, that's powerful. I haven't heard anyone say that yet. And now that you're saying it, I'm thinking of myself on FaceTime. And most of the time, I'm staring at myself.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. We all do it. Yeah. And don't feel bad about doing it. It's totally normal, because it's abnormal to be able to see ourselves in conversation. So you want to turn that off. You don't want to be able to see yourself. That's one huge way to increase how much you enjoy those things. Another thing you can do, so a second thing, is to think about ways that you can connect that you normally couldn't connect. So, for example, I've been in touch with friends from high school that I lost touch with, and friends from college that I don't really talk to, because if you're stuck in the house, odds are other people are stuck in the house too, and they have extra time. So you can take this as an opportunity to reconnect with people as well, and our research suggests that that is really a very healthy way to handle this. And then the third thing that you can do is not feel guilty about increased screen time. So if you feel drawn to rewatching The Office, and if you spend a few hours some evening just binge watching a new show, those might be the sorts of things that you normally feel bad about it. But our research suggests that those are actually things that make people feel good, and that the people in quarantine who are doing those sorts of things actually have increased well-being instead of lower well-being. So don't feel guilty about turning to your favorite television shows or your favorite movies as a means of feeling connected. That's good. That's healthy.
We'll be right back with Dr. Shira Gabriel. We'll be talking more about social isolation.
The pioneers made it through years alone on the prairie. People have made it through, you know, death camps and prison. And you can make it through this. I'm not trying to minimize it. This is very difficult, but your physical health is important too, and your long-term mental health is important as well.
Beautifully said. Dr. Shira Gabriel, thank you so much for being a part of the show, and have a beautiful night.
Thank you. You too. This was fun.
You can watch more of Phil Kogan and Shira Gabriel on I'm Listening, our mental health show that airs every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific on radio.com. All right, we're back. And now it's time for question of the night.
Question of the night is based on a study. A study, according to Pure Wow, says that these zodiac signs should never date because they're two personalities.
Dr. Shira Gabriel, associate professor of psychology. I think positive outcome that
Aries with
the
Taurus, Taurus with
the
Gemini,
also,
Gemini with Capricorn,
is that it also
Cancer with Aquarius, Leo with Scorpio, Virgo with Pisces, Libra with Virgo, Scorpio with Leo,
and that we're realizing how we really do need these relationships in our lives.
Astrology is something that is so meaningful and powerful to so many people. It's also something that a lot of people really disregard and don't see any value in. So the question is, survey done by InStyle says that 61% of people seriously consider someone's zodiac sign before entering a relationship. So do you seriously consider someone's zodiac sign before dating them? It's going to get real because this is kind of like the punchy topic of do you care about people's politics. I personally don't know much about astrology, so I don't know what to look for, although I just learned that as a Scorpio, it's toxic if I'm with a Leo. So heads up, I've had issues in the past with Gemini, so that might be what I need to really avoid. Well. So do you consider someone's zodiac sign before dating them? First person, absolutely
not. So I think
that's
wonderful.
That's
amazing to be able to
You know, it's interesting. There are, our personalities
really
are co-created.
But don't
we have different people
on
based on the different relationships we're in, right? So
really
if you see me
so
operating as Dr. Donahue
about,
in my office, that's one version of who I am. You'll see a different version if I'm with someone I'm dating, and yet another when I'm with friends, depending even on who the friend is, and even yet another when I'm maybe with my mom. And those are all parts of who I am. We are, again, co-created because we're responding to the person in front of us. So we have many different selves. And culturally, we've obsessed ourselves with this idea of the authentic self. We have many different authentic selves. We're many selves, always changing, always different in relationships. Are there core themes and threads that we carry with us? Sure. But those can also be modified in micro or macro ways based on, again, who we're with, our mood, you know, what's going on in our jobs. I mean, we're so contextualized that we're a big ball of shift and change. So should you consider dating someone based on their zodiac sign? That is our question of the night. Let's see. Someone else said, yes, Dr. Chris, what sign are you?
Are you concerned or are you
and
seeing
the little
possibility
that I do know about
some new
being a Scorpio,
syndromes coming out of this
true.
That maybe we wouldn't have culturally encountered prior?
We get a bad rap. The good rap we get is we are hypersexual. And again,
that's
that
such
is
a
all
great
true.
Question.
Someone
I
else
mean,
said,
I,
hell no, WTF.
I don't know.
Like, so we don't have a lot of zodiac like astrology fans listening or answering the question
before.
Tonight. But those are out there. There's a lot of people that swear by
this.
Question tonight, do you seriously consider someone's zodiac sign for dating them? Someone else said, not really. Although I am a Sagittarius and people assume things about me because of my sign.
I've
had some assumptions made about me as well. Although you're a Sag, I don't know what that means, so I assume nothing. I'm a big fan of meeting
the
person to see what those traits
look like in real time. I'm such a relationalist, and I'm always
because we talk about personality
traits,
it's pretty sterile and compartmentalized, and we don't necessarily know what someone else's other traits will do in response to that trait as well, right?
And then finally, I want you to just weigh in on this.
Somebody else said, yes,
has created some
to better understand their communication
styles. There's a lot of people, you know, they're using the apps, they're dating, and some people are saying, look, self-isolation's gone on long enough. I want to get out there and meet people. I want some affection in my life, maybe some sexuality. And I'm saying, as a mental health professional, please don't do that. You know, date online, meet up in separation. But some people are saying, look, some people need those touch needs met. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, there's the MMPI, there's the Myers-Briggs, all sorts of different personality tests. And I always tell people to hold them lightly because those are based on stats
and
norms, and there's always outliers.
And
again, we're constantly changing and different based on age bracket, who we're in relationship to, also just trauma based on all the different factors. And these tests can't accommodate for all of that. They're based on a lot of statistical norms and a lot of assumptions. So, question like, do you seriously consider someone's astrology or zodiac sign before dating them? Someone said, nope, I personally don't. I just go for whoever I like.
Have regular access
sounds like
to
me.
It.
Someone
those
else said maybe. I'm a Scorpio
things.
With a very high sex drive.
I think one
and
thing
I'm
that's
curious if
to
another
keep
Scorpio
in mind
can
is
keep
that
up.
This isn't forever, even though it
I've
feels
never
like
dated
it's
another
forever.
Scorpio, but I'd like to, and I
pass,
bet I could keep
just
up.
Like everything
someone else said,
yes.
That's one of the first questions I ask on a date or when I meet someone. Yeah.
We're gonna find
I've
ways
had that asked a lot. I definitely
have
to learn more though before
but
I can make a lot of
money
out of that.
It if you get sick.
And we'll end on this one. Someone said, "I'm a Gemini. sign. So people either hate me or they love me. I've had someone not date me because of my sign. Yeah, I get it. Look, I have bad experience with Gemini, so that would be me. I'd be like, hard pass. Sorry about it. That's our question tonight. Thank you to those that participated. That's always up on our Loveline IG stories, so weigh in on that. That's there every night. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and on radio.com.
People have made it through, you know, death camps. We're back. Now it's time to slide into those DMs. And you can make it through this. It's very difficult, but your physical health is important too, and your long-term mental health is important as well.
Beautifully said. Dr. Shira Gabriel, thank you so much for being a part of the show, and have a beautiful night.
Thank you. You too. This was fun.
You can watch more of Phil Kogan and Shira Gabriel on I'm Listening, our mental health show that airs every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific on radio.com.
You don't know if they're trying to lose weight or gain weight, and you don't know if the weight gain or weight loss is tied to a trauma, a mental health issue, a physical issue, a disease. Don't relate to people around that, you know? And I know we think we're sometimes giving them a compliment, but here's an example of a person who they're not wanting to lose weight and they're feeling really bad about it. And I've seen that happen with males as well, where someone's trying to bulk or someone's trying to slim down and people are making comments on the weight. I've had it done to me, and I'm at least boundaried enough to sometimes say something like, hey, you know, it sounds like you're trying to give me a compliment. I appreciate that, but I really prefer to not discuss my body. I try to not consider it, because I try to practice body neutrality, where it is what it is. And as long as I'm exercising and feeling good and taking care of myself in the ways that make sense to me, then it doesn't matter. And so I try to not assess it. I'm not the person that stares in the mirror looking at it. I don't have, you know, a goal weight. I'm trying to stay out of that. It's very difficult. So I can at least say personally, I prefer to have people not weighing in on gain, loss. That's life. We're always going to gain weight or lose weight. That's just part of life, you know, based on a multitude of different factors happening. But again, you never know if it's a good or bad thing. So just be very thoughtful. But here's an example, you know, where you can practice with your friends, having a more honest relationship with them. Say to them, you know, I want to be the kind of friends where we support the best in each other. Let's be the kind of friend group where we don't talk about our bodies and engage in body shaming or diet culture talk. You know, you can say, let's be the kind of friends that, you know, really our center, our engagements around care, you know, like, I love that. Like, how can we be more loving? So tell them it hurts them when they make fun of you, and their response to you sharing that says everything about how healthy they are as a friend. If they're like, oh, I'm sorry that that happened, I'll stop, great friends. If they're like, you need to get over it, calm down, it's not a big deal, not great friends. That's a sign of them being toxic, right? When we go to someone in our lives, we share with them the impact their behavior or words have on us, and how they manage or handle that and how they respond tells us everything about them. So, woof, here's another one. Hey, Dr. Chris, I have a question in regards to relationship OCD. What are your thoughts? Does it exist? I feel like I may have this. What is the best route to getting help? What type of therapy should I expect? Bam, you're all in. Relationship OCD, look.
All right, we're back. Now it's time for question of the night. Question of the night is based on a study. A study, according to Pure Wow, says that these zodiac signs should never date because their two personalities are always toxic. Oh my gosh. Aries with a Taurus, Taurus with a Gemini, Gemini with Capricorn, Cancer with Aquarius, Leo with Scorpio, Virgo with Pisces, Libra with Virgo, Scorpio with Leo. I mean, that's the work that we all have to do. And that's not it's so fascinating. Astrology is something that is so meaningful and powerful to so many people. It's also something that a lot of people really disregard and don't see any value in. So the question of the night is, survey done by InStyle says that 61% of people seriously consider someone's zodiac sign before entering a relationship. So do you seriously consider someone's zodiac sign before dating them? This is going to get real, because this is kind of like the punchy topic of, do you care about people's politics? I personally don't know much about astrology, so I don't know what to look for, although I just learned that as a Scorpio, it's toxic if I'm with a Leo, so heads up. I've had issues in the past with Gemini, so that might be what I need to really avoid. So do you consider someone's zodiac sign before dating them? First person, absolutely not, in all caps. You know, it's interesting. Our personalities are co-created. We are different people based on the different relationships we're in, right? So if you see me operating as Dr. Donahue in my office, that's one version of who I am. You'll see a different version if I'm with someone I'm dating, and yet another when I'm with friends, depending on even on who the friend is, and even yet another when I'm maybe with my mom. And those are all parts of who I am. We are, again, co-created because we're responding to the person in front of us. So we have many different selves. And culturally, we've obsessed ourselves with this idea of the authentic self. We have many different authentic selves. We're many selves, always changing, always different in relationships. Are there core themes and threads that we carry with us? Sure.
sure. But those can also be modified in micro or macro ways based on, again, who we're with, our mood, you know, what's going on in our jobs. I mean, we're so contextualized that we're a big ball of shift and change. So should you consider dating someone based on their zodiac sign? That is our question of the night. Let's see. Someone else said, yes, Dr. Chris, what sign are you? I'm a Scorpio. And the little bit I do know about being a Scorpio, it's